Hello and welcome to the first ever edition of the Albion Roar Down Under, sponsored by Pure Media. This is a brand new podcast show for those Brighton and Hove Albion expats and local converts here in Australia and New Zealand. My name's Richie, here in Auckland, New Zealand, and joining me every week is the founder of the Seagulls Down Under fan club, Steve Longley. Over the coming episodes, we'll be talking all things Albion with fans, ex-players, representatives, and other assorted undesirables across the continent. This week, Steve and I, myself, will be discussing what it's like supporting the Albion from the other side of the globe and giving our verdict on the season so far. We'll also be previewing the upcoming home game against Everton and chatting to Everton diehard Kevin Blakeman with his thoughts about the game and how he sees the Premier League panning out. Finally, we'll get the lowdown from Steve on the upcoming Renf charity match between the Brighton and Palace fans and information on how you can get involved. So, Steve, welcome. Just another day at the office for you, all the media you do.
Yeah, hi, Richard.
Yeah, I've noticed you always seem to be on the Premier League fan zone.
Yeah, the Premier League fan zone, that's just incredible. They contacted me just after we went up, after the Wigan game, asking me to do an interview, which was really good. I don't even know how they got my details, but anyway, they contacted me. We talked about going up, and they've been contacting me ever since to do the interviews, and as I said the other day on another podcast, it's hard for me to do it because obviously the time difference now, the clocks have changed. So I've got Albion fans around the world doing it, you know, guy in Asia, guy in the Middle East, couple of guys in the States.
This is the thing, is you don't, obviously you run the Seagulls Down Under, which covers Australia and New Zealand, but you randomly get contacted by people from all over, you know, Brighton fans from all over the world.
I get emails every week, and it's even more so now because since June, I've had people contact me about the Ashes.
So are you organising a big Seagulls Down Under get-together?
Yeah, I haven't got that far just yet, but obviously there's quite a few people coming over. There's people that want to meet up for the Boxing Day test. There's Ian Hart's actually coming over. Hart is coming over, and he's going to the test in Perth. So he's been badgering me, asking me where he can watch the game against Spurs. It's just endless. It's just, I can't believe it actually, considering, you know, 7 years ago, all I wanted to do was get about 10 guys in the pub to go and watch a game. And now we're knocking on the door of 500 people.
So Seagulls Down Under has 500 members?
Yeah, almost 496 at the moment.
So what is it like? I mean, I've been in New Zealand for over 7 years now, and it's difficult to... Well, I wouldn't say it's difficult to follow the Albion while you're over here. It's just a lot of late nights and early mornings, and it kind of takes your toll after a while. But I have to say, the Premier League, it sort of makes up for it. I'm loving this season already. I mean, I'm happy with our start, and it's just a massive buzz every time I stay up at 2 o'clock in the morning to watch the game on a Saturday or whatever it is.
I mean, it's great. It's great for us because we can watch every game live. You know, I don't know. Actually, I don't even know. Can you do that in New Zealand? I'm not sure. Actually.
Yeah. It's on every game's live on beIN Sports.
Yeah. So every game's live on Optus here. And yeah, it's great. It's, listening to JC and Warren is good, you know, good entertainment. Listening in bed at 3 o'clock in the morning, but watching the games is just a different ball game, isn't it?
It is. It's just so exciting to see the Albion players going up against these Premier League teams. It almost seems a bit surreal because we're so used to the Albion playing the likes of, I don't know, Bristol City or, back in the day, Colchester. And those are the sort of teams we were used to playing.
Yeah, until we got up to the Championship, really. Probably the first time round with Mark McGee and the club's got a bit bigger. And then obviously... Once we went up again with Gus, it was, you know, you're playing teams that have come down from the Premier League, and there's definitely more bigger clubs in the Championship now than there ever has been, I think.
And how do you see the beginning of the Albion's Premier League campaign? I mean, it's been a pretty steady start, but I think overall we can be fairly happy.
The first game was just a a novelty game, really, wasn't it, against CC? We knew we were going to be up against it. We weren't expecting much, and bearing in mind what City have gone on and done recently, losing 2-0 was quite a good result. Obviously now they're up and firing, so.
The weekend we played Arsenal, there was a lot of the big six absolutely trouncing the opposition. And okay, we lost to Arsenal, but we gave it a bit of a go. I think the thing that annoyed me slightly was that, in the last sort of 10, 15 minutes, we had a bit of a go at Arsenal. And if only we'd sort of started that a bit earlier, maybe brought on Murray a little bit earlier, because when Murray came on, he looked really dangerous.
Oh, I think the thing is, at the moment, it's when you play the big teams, there's always that bit of fear that if you go and do what, I mean, let's take Huddersfield, for example. They tried to take the game to Tottenham, and look what happened. They got stuffed 5-0. It could come back to be a benefit later on in the season when, things like goal difference come into account and.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, that's absolutely right. And how do you think the new players have been settling in? I mean, they had a bit of a slow start, but gradually they've sort of slotted in quite nicely. And I would say the progress they've made has been pretty good.
Oh, yeah, I think they struggled with the pace of the Premier League to start with. I mean, it's a big step up. It was even a big step up for those guys that were playing in the team last season. Everything's so much quicker. It's not so much. It's probably in the last third that things start speeding up, and then you can quite easily get caught ball watching all the time. We're defending deep, and they're knocking it around at the back and everything like that. We're sort of comfortable. But as soon as they get over the halfway line, that's when you notice the step up and, the speed gets quicker, the passing gets quicker, the one touch. And we've got to learn to sort of cope with that, really.
Yeah, definitely. And Chris Hughton has given us a fantastic defensive base with Duncan Duffy just playing phenomenally well. And it's the strength that you need to build on. So we've got the defence sorted. We just need to find some goals from somewhere.
Yeah, everyone's screaming out about the striker situation, and we don't know the whole story about that. The main guy, the medical fell through, and I think we put our eggs in one basket. And when they wouldn't release him earlier on in the transfer window, and we had to wait around, it sort of knocked us back a bit when he did fail the medical, because there was only a short period to try and find somebody else. I think, Hemed's given a good account of himself. Gross has done well. March has played well, but I think he just needs to get in the game a little bit more. I think there's more, definitely more to come from him.
He's the one that's kind of stood out a little bit, but I think you're right. There are occasions during the games where he kind of sort of drifts off, but then he comes back and he does something quite special, and you're like, oh, that's he deserves to be there. But yeah, you're right. He needs to be a little bit more consistent. But one thing I would say about him is defensively, he certainly puts the work in.
Oh yeah, defensively he's stepped up, because I mean last season if something broke down you'd see him sort of jogging back or whatever, but now he's doing basically what Scalack did last season. Scalack was put in the side because he defended well.
Yep.
Everyone used to go, why is Scalack playing? Why? And I think he was playing, especially away from home, I think he was playing not because of his attacking ability, but because of his defending ability. And I think that's what March has stepped up, and his defensive abilities, really shone.
Yep. And of course, he's chipped in with a goal as well
Yeah,
in a
a
game we should
header.
have got something
I
out
mean,
of.
yeah. Well, yeah, we could say the same about the Watford game, couldn't we?
Yeah, I think with the Watford game, I was more disappointed when we played Bournemouth, just because I thought we played really, really well to go 1-0 up and in control of the game. And then I think we just kind of lost our concentration. And then when they equalised, obviously they piled on the pressure. And I think it's just those little mistakes. We've just got to cut them out. And the Premier League, you get punished. I know it's a cliche. Everybody's been saying it. In the Championship, you might get away with a few. And in this Premier League, then, you do get punished. But it really does boil down to that. And I could name a few really tiny mistakes, just giving the ball away in midfield, sloppy passes that have led to the opposition getting in, and it's just really cutting out those mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, there's been, you could probably say, two or three mistakes in every game, but, you know, some of the games you get away with it. Against the bigger boys, you don't get away with it. So, yeah, I mean, you'd like the problem with the Premier League is that most teams that don't, you know, that are there already, they hit the ground running. They know what it's all about. We're new to it, you know, Huddersfield are new to it, and it takes a little time to get used to what's going on around you. But the problem with the Premier League is you just don't get the time to do that. We've been fortunate, and we've been very fortunate in a way that we've played, you know, we played City and Leicester, first two games of the season, two teams that have won the Premier League.
Mm.
Then we played three or four lesser teams. I think if we had played, let's say, with Palace, you know, Palace are now playing, they're playing Chelsea this weekend, I think it is.
Yeah.
You know, and they played, I think it was three or four big teams in a row. Now, if that happened to us, we could easily find ourselves in the situation Palace are in.
We've also got to remember, we've got a tough run in towards the end of the season. And we've got Man United, penultimate game, then Liverpool last game of the season. I'm pretty sure Spurs are there somewhere. So we've really got to be safe, you know, before the last maybe two or three games of the season.
Yeah. I think looking at our running, I mean, I haven't looked at the other team's runnings, but looking at our running, I think you have to say we need to be safe by the end of March. And that's, you know, there's just no two ways about that. Unless we bring in somebody who can hit the back of the net on a regular basis and start scaring defences for bigger teams. But at the moment, it's all against the bigger teams, it's all a damage limitation thing, really.
Yeah, now I know everybody's talking about the lack of a striker. I mean, it wasn't a disaster that we didn't get a striker and that everybody said it was, because as you said before, I think Tom Ahmed has really stepped up. Completely unlucky to get a three-match ban. It was trial by media, that. He was damned at the point that Sky decided to show the footage, which I guess it's their right to do. But the problem is all the media commentators were kind of accusing him of doing something naughty without giving him the benefit of the doubt. And I think that's down to what's gone on before with other players that have stamped, and perhaps the maliciousness that they've done it with. The next time a stamp comes along, it doesn't matter who it is or how it comes about, it's always, it must be deliberate. So when the pundits have a look at it, they automatically think, right, he's guilty. You know, that's got to be deliberate. You know, they don't see an accident in that. And then you don't take into account the personality of the player, the nature of the player. I just think he was really hard done by.
Well, it was. I mean, it was definitely trial by media, because match of the day never even mentioned it. And yet Sky, after that game, if that game had been a 3 p.m. kickoff on a Saturday afternoon, along with about seven or eight other games, that incident would never even be looked at. Because it was a single game, and Sky had an hour to fill, they filled it with that incident. And it didn't help matters that the, I don't even know her name, but the presenter on Sky was a Newcastle fan. You know, need I say any more?
Did you see the post-match interview with Tom Ahmed and the interviewer, you know, accusing him of doing the stamp? And it caught him, it blindsided him after he played so well. He scored the winning goal. The elation and the love he's got from the home crowd, he's coming, he's really hyped. And then to be asked a question like that, absolutely disgraceful. I think you've got to, like, the media have got to take a step back, and the FA have got to deal with it. But the problem is the media give over their opinions, and their opinions are biased towards stirring up controversy because people will watch. It's a little unfortunate in that respect. And that's why I think, you know, he copped the ban.
Well, I looked at that footage about three or four times, and he was looking away from where his foot was going. He trod on him. That's what he did. He trod on him.
Yeah.
He accidentally trod on him. And you know what? I don't know how true this was, but I heard that he went in and apologised to the guy after the game, and the guy said, "Oh, that's don't worry about it. Never even felt it really." The three guys, well, there was three referees on the panel, weren't there? I mean, they should be ashamed of themselves, really. It was the first incident under this new ruling, and he was made scapegoat, basically.
And I think from a Brighton fan's perspective, we've got long memories. We remember the game against Burnley when we were 1-0 up and Birram Kayal was running the midfield and he got stamped on viciously. And Joey Barton knew what he was doing and got nothing.
We know the type of player Joey Barton is, right? But when Joey Barton comes out in the media and says that ban is a disgrace, you know, you've got to
Yeah,
wonder.
that's true. And poor old Thomas now has got to sit on the sidelines after having such a terrific start. All that momentum is now gone. It does give Glenn Murray a chance to step up, and I think he'll start on Sunday against Everton. He's had a nice long rest now with the international break. I'm hoping that Anthony Lockhart will start as well. You know, they both start creating and scoring some goals for us.
There's not any reason to really pick holes in what we've done, to be honest,
No.
because you know, 7 points, seven games, you know, you couldn't have asked for any more, really.
Yeah,
We've
that's
set
it.
a point a game, you know, 20 points by Christmas or 25 points by Christmas would be the ideal marker, and you're just got to take it from there. Last season, people were getting carried away with the thought of going up, and it started way back in sort of January or February. People going on about going up, and if you remember, I kept a lid on it all the way through on the Seagulls Down Under page. We just took it one game at a time, one game at a time. And that's all you can do with the Premier League, one game at a time. And whatever happens, you just need to forget about it, move on. Don't dwell on it, because if you dwell on it, you know, it's going to be in the back of your mind, and yeah, and the players know that. They're you know, they've been around long enough to know that you don't dwell on a previous result. Get on and
And Chris
get
will
right.
be, you know, he'll be telling them that as well. And I mean, he's the calmest guy on the sidelines. Although I have seen him when we've scored, he's actually got a bit excited occasionally,
Yeah.
which is surprising for Chris. But good to see.
Well, if it was me and we scored, I'd be doing a David Wagner
Exactly. Yeah, like charging down the
And how would you get banned? I don't know.
I'll tell you what is difficult being a Seagulls fan over here and watching them in the middle of night is when we do score, is trying to be quiet and celebrating in silence. I have a family, I have two young boys, and they're all asleep. So I'm sitting in my lounge watching the game on my computer with my headphones on. And when I'm watching the Newcastle game, and it's a tense game, and you know, are we going to score? And when we eventually do, trying to keep a lid on it is impossible.
Well, I used to do that in bed listening to JC and Warren. I quite often wake up the missus.
I bet she loves you. Has she not kicked you out and said, go and listen to it in the other room?
was only occasionally I'd listen to it, because normally, when I'd normally try and listen to it while watching a Premier League game. Occasionally, I'd listen in bed. And she'd certainly know when they scored.
It's only going to get worse, to be honest with you, as the season gets more tense. I think there was one game, I think it was the Birmingham game, where we scored in the last minute, and the game was on a delay here, so I didn't see the score. And we're watching it around, I think it was on beIN Sports at lunchtime or something, and we're having lunch. And when we scored in the last minute, I think I made both my boys cry from jumping up and shouting. My wife wasn't too happy. I've got a like my youngest was about 5 months at the time. He didn't know what was going on. So yeah, it's trying to keep a lid on it. It is interesting in the middle of the night. But one thing I would say is about watching it in the middle of the night is you do get peace watching it. So you know,
Yes.
I make sure
Well,
no disturbances.
I mean, my boys are old enough to, they're not boys anymore, they're young men, but they'll watch it with me occasionally. Most of the time they're out, so they're watching it in a pub somewhere. But
Do you
it's,
miss
I
the
mean, it's.
opportunity of taking them to the games? That's one thing I'm going to really miss, is for having a season ticket for 25 odd years and then coming over here. I'm going to miss, because I started going with my dad, and I'm really going to miss taking my son to the football. I took my eldest, who's five, to watch the All Whites against, I can't remember who it was against. It was their World Cup qualifier. Oh, Solomon Islands, that was it. And we were in a stadium, which was, it's not a bad stadium. It's a rugby stadium. It's not a bad stadium. Half the stadium's got a really nice stand, and the other half is like the Withdean, completely open. So if it rains, you get wet. But all the fans are in one side. So it's just really strange. So you're looking at an empty stadium, but next to you, you've got all these fans, and it's very family orientated. I'm not, obviously, a football's a family game, is a game that the family should all enjoy. But there are certain sections where you go to football that you expect to do a bit of singing and be a bit raucous and all that.
Doesn't happen over here, does it? It doesn't happen even at, well, the only game really that happens is the two derby games, the Sydney and Melbourne derbies. The Sydney derby's coming up in a couple of weeks, there's 24 of us going to that. But you get both sides of the state. It's almost like an Eastern European feel, even more so a couple of years ago when they were letting off the flares, but that's all been knocked on the head now.
It's because it's like the Eastern European communities that are over there.
Yeah,
They're the ones that are passionate about the
but
football.
you go to, I mean, I went to the Australia game the other night. I mean, there must have been, I don't know, 2 or 3 thousand Syrians in there, and you could hear them. Australia, you couldn't hear anything.
Oh, really?
It's strange, and you'd think they do pick up on it a bit. I mean, in the Sydney FC, they've got the Cove, which is their singing end, and they do sing all through the game, and they try to get other parts of the ground involved in the singing, and they quite often do join in. The same with the Wanderers, and the same, no doubt, Melbourne City and Victory. And if you go to Perth, there's a huge UK base in Perth who go to the Perth games, and you've only got to listen to the. In fact, Perth, I would say. I mean, I've never been over to Perth, but when you listen to the Perth fans on the TV, they're very UK-based songs, whereas here in Sydney, they're very sort of orchestrated songs, and they never, especially with Wanderers, they never. You know how something I do miss is, especially when you should stand in the North Stand at Goldstone, or you go to any ground, they can make up a song on the spot. Like somebody would do something on the pitch, let's say it's an opposition player, and all of a sudden, if we were the away fans, we'd make up a song about that opposition player. Whereas, and we'd give him grief. And they just don't do that here. It's all orchestrated, and they, a bit like, Dortmund or something, because they've got the guy down the front who leads it all with his megaphone and goodness knows what else. But yeah, there's no, it's like they've gone through, right, they, it's like it's not, it's almost like they're given a hymn sheet before they go in. These are today's songs. We will start with 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then we will repeat them throughout the game. Honestly, when you go to the and the thing is, they sing, especially the Wanderers, maybe the Sydney fans as well, but they sort of tend to sing about themselves. There's no sort of like a player song. Like you go to the Albion, they sing about Knocker or Dunk or whatever.
Maybe
There's
these players
no
just aren't
song.
special enough.
Well, there's no songs made up about the players, and I find it really strange. And that's probably just because what we've been brought up with.
Well, it's a different culture. But I mean, you would have thought with, I know in Australia a lot of the sports are quite regionalised, aren't they? So, for example, Aussie rules football is mainly around the Melbourne area, even though there are teams in Adelaide, or there's one team in Adelaide, one team in Sydney,
There's
Perth.
two in
I said
Sydney.
two now, but it is mainly centered around Melbourne, whereas rugby league is sort of Queensland and New South Wales. And they, you know, they're passionate about it. I mean, the NRL over here is, it's quite well publicised, and it, you know, it looks like a lot goes on in those games, and the crowds get fairly passionate.
Yeah, I mean, the AFL, they tend to sing and chant quite a bit. The rugby league, maybe a little bit, but my local side is Manly in the rugby league. I don't really follow. I like to see them do well, obviously, because of my local side, but I wouldn't say follow them with a passion. I started to when I first came over. I used to go to the odd game here and there.
Yeah.
The only song you ever hear when Manly are playing is Manly, Manly, Manly. That's it. Really? You know, I said to my boy, I think we should go at the end and start a song, sing song. And
you need to take a big drum and a trumpet.
Oh, don't talk to me about drums. Please do not talk to me about drums. They had, in the Socceroos end, the Australian end, where there was probably only about 300 or 400 of them, and that massive yellow in the middle behind the goal, they had three guys playing snare drums throughout the whole game. You could hear it echoing around the stadium. I don't think I could go to Stella's Park now. That guy with the drum,
yeah,
I'll be open. Smash it over his head, boom, boom, boom,
yeah,
boom.
Yeah. I know he's trying to create an atmosphere, but if you've got to rely on some guy beating a drum to create an atmosphere, then you know you're in trouble.
Oh, no, the worst one, actually, the worst one. I've got the worst one. Huddersfield and that bloody... I watched them against Spurs, and I ended up turning the sound down. It was like... They got the Gus Clackers as well.
I do enjoy reading the We Are Brighton website. They talk about the atmosphere at the Emirates and how it's all very civil. And, you know, a lot of people who go to the Emirates go because it's almost like a sightseeing thing, isn't it? I'll go to London. I've got to go to the Emirates. There's a beautiful stadium. There's a football match going on. Yes, yeah, it's a novelty. There doesn't seem to be that passion or that atmosphere that you get at a lot of other grounds. Anyway, I think we'll move on. You are listening to the Albion Roar Down Under podcast, sponsored by Pure Media, the full-service video production company based here in Auckland. Visit www.pureproductions.co.nz for more information on how Pure can create a fully customised, crafted video for your business. Also, we have an email address. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please email albionroardownunder@gmail.com. Okay, I think we'll talk about this week's game against Everton. So I will bring in our Everton fan who moved over to New Zealand 10 years ago, and we'll see what his thoughts on the game are, because Everton haven't had the greatest of starts. I think the Brighton fans at the beginning of the season might have seen this as a tough game, but I think now we're thinking that we really should be winning this.
Well, they spent a lot of money, Everton.
Okay, now on the line we have a diehard Everton fan, Kevin Blakeman. How are you doing?
Good.
Good, good. So, Everton, not the greatest start to this season. What is happening?
Well, I expected a little bit of a nervous start with all the new players, but I don't think anyone expected it to be as bad as it was or is. Maybe we've got too many similar players. Maybe there's a bit of loss of confidence, but hopefully we'll put it right.
So do you think, I mean, you bought quite a few players this season. Do you think it's just them taking time to gel, them taking time to get up to, I know it's a cliche, getting up to speed to the Premier League, but it just seems that a lot of overseas players need that time.
I think we've one mistake we've made, and we've got too many very similar players. We've got a lot of individual geniuses, but together they don't seem to work. You know, it's, with the exception of maybe Sandro and Klaassen, they just don't, I just don't think they have what it takes to be in the Premier League. The rest of them, even a couple of last year's ones who were amazing last year, are all of a sudden just not up to it. So I think we've just got too many similar. Add Rooney into the mix. He drops deep quite a lot. Where does that leave Snyder and Gay, who were outstanding last season?
It seems to be that Everton are in a little bit of a similar position to Brighton, as in you're lacking an out-and-out striker. Although, to be fair, Brighton have strikers, but we, in the transfer window, we failed to buy that running-behind striker that everybody needed. Are Everton relying too much on Rooney?
I don't think it's relying on Rooney, because I don't think he was ever supposed to be Lukaku's replacement. I think we missed out. I There was possibly Giroud. There was a lot of possibles, and I think we just ended up running out of time. So I don't know if the fans will be patient enough just to stick it out till January until we can buy someone. That's not acceptable, you know. So the feeling is that people are starting to turn on Coleman now, and it might all be down to the fact that we don't have anyone to score goals.
So, do you think Koeman will last? I guess it depends what your next two, three results are.
Yeah, I hope so. He can't unfortunately last if we keep going the way we are. However, I'm a massive fan, and I think it's frustrating sometimes. Some people have short memories, you know. David Moyes, he kept us up, and then we finished fourth, and then in his next year we finished 16th or 17th. You know, we just about survived. And then after that bad season, David Moyes didn't have another bad year. So I hope that's taught us not to just jump into the decisions and get rid of Coleman.
Sunday's game. What do you think? Are you confident that you can come down to the Amex and get a result? Are you worried because it's a new team? We're a new team in the Premier League. We've had a steady start. We're above you in the league. As you get
I don't think
reminded quite a
anyone's
few
confident
times.
at the moment. especially when you play against a promoted team and they're at home, they try and get as many scalps as possible. You know, it's hard to answer the question without sounding like you're talking down to somebody. But you know, we shouldn't be losing against newly promoted teams, not Brighton in particular, but other teams. You know, like we've put ourselves in a position now where we should be winning. However, saying that, I'm looking at two teams who are struggling to score. So I'm thinking someone's going to win 1-0. And if someone doesn't win 1-0, then it's going to be 4-4 or 3-2. You know, it's one of those. Often people look at these games and it's like, oh, it'll be one goal. And then they end up being like games people remember, you know. So we'll see.
One thing I would say,
Certainly not confident, though.
one thing I would say about Sunday's game is we have an excellent defence, and we've got
Yeah.
two centre halves who are really performing at the moment. And in Shane Duffy, who is an ex-Everton player. Steve, what do you think about Sunday's game?
Oh, sorry.
Did we wake you up, Steve?
I think Steve fell asleep listening to my Everton talk.
Steve did.
No, it's an interesting one because Everton are one of those teams that always there or thereabouts, or most of the time they're there or thereabouts, you know, on the fringes. So you'd put them up in sort of top eight of Premier League sides, I think. And at the moment, obviously, they're not performing. So the Albion are going to look and think, well, this is a fairly big scalp we could take here, even though they're below us at the moment. I think Everton are going to sort of click at some stage, but yeah, let's just hope it's not against us.
Well, the last international break, we came back and we beat West Brom 3-1. So I think the guys will come back confident and hoping that another result like that is possible. We had a few players gone on international duty, and unfortunately, it looks like Davy Proper came back with an injury.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. I don't know if he was just a precaution that he didn't play against Holland.
I think it was a thigh strain. I don't know whether it was a precaution or not, but it didn't help the Dutch anyway. They didn't qualify.
It's got nil nil written all over, hasn't it? You just never know. I mean, it's.
I'm going to go for a 1-0 Brighton win with Shane Duffy scoring the winner.
I think you'll be regretting not buying the ass. I think you might get a goal on Sunday.
It's interesting actually because he was somebody we were looking at, but I think we were looking at taking him on loan. But the
Yeah.
thing was that his actual goals record wasn't that great, but you actually fancied him, don't you?
So, the story that I like people from other clubs don't realize, I think the story behind it was Coleman turned up and just he automatically didn't like him for some strange reason. And he came out in one of his first press conferences and said, if he wants to play football, then he should go and find another club. There was a joke around because he didn't have a locker and all these sort of things, and he was with the under 21s and then ended up just taking the under 21 league by storm, you know, and the Everton won the league in the end. And then obviously he's come on this year, he's got a chance through desperation. And to be fair to him, he's not through a strop, he's not through his toys out of the pram, he's got on with it and he's scored a few goals. And I think it's a good reward, and that's why the fans love him, I think.
Yeah, that's quite refreshing for a player. as well, I think, especially in the Premier League. They can get a little bit precious.
Let's hope we get another one on Sunday.
Let's hope not. So I just want to go back to Shane Duffy at Everton. He only played a few games for you, but you have said to me in the past that you thought he was a good player. How come Everton let him go?
One of the weak points we all thought about Moyes was he wasn't he liked to go out and find the bargains, you know, like Tim Cahill, obviously top of that list. Well, he wasn't that great at bringing the young players through. And I think a lot of them just got impatient. And, you know, we've always had good defenders. No matter what, Everton has generally had a good defence, even in the bad times. So it's always been hard for those guys to come through. And we have a lot that we think, you know, this guy's going to really do it, you know, and they just don't seem to make it. So whether it's a general thing where they don't make the step up, or whether it was the manager at the time who doesn't trust in his younger players, who knows? But yeah, like I said, I'd watched the youth teams, and I've always liked the guy for all the way through. So I think he got a very good signing. And even in the few games I watched at Brighton last year, I thought he was always excellent. So we have to watch out for him now.
Yeah, and he's made a formidable partnership with Lewis Dunk. Two big, strong, tall centre-halves. But much more than that, both of them very comfortable on the ball. Lewis Dunk especially, comfortable at taking the ball out of defence. And his passing range has been phenomenal this season, Steve, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, it's those diagonal balls like an exocet, doesn't it? It's great to see, but I think he's just coming in leaps and bounds. You know, he did make quite a lot of mistakes sort of a couple of seasons ago. He probably made a few last year as well, but he just seems to have grown up, doesn't he?
So maybe we could swap him for Ashley Williams.
Ashley Williams and 20 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, to be honest with you, I'd do it at the moment. He's just constantly full of mistakes. So, yeah, you've just described the opposite of Ashley Williams when you say he comes out of defence and he can pass the ball and he can control it. I don't think he can do any of it.
Lewis Dunk, if he carries on playing well and Brighton have a good season, I wondered if there was a possibility that he may make the World Cup. I don't know. I don't want to go into the England conversation because it bores me. But I do think that there's a certain select amount of players that will always, however well they play, will always get picked for England. And it just doesn't seem to me that anyone else kind of gets a look in.
Yeah, I think you already know from me that I agree with that. You know, you're not in one of those teams, you're not in much of a chance, really. You might get on the in the squad, but not in the first team.
Interesting fact that Everton and Brighton have two of the smallest goalkeepers in the Premier League. I've been reading the Argus website. And that's interesting, actually, because both of them are over 6 foot, and you would suggest that over 6 foot for a goalkeeper is a pretty decent size. I guess it's that all the other goalkeepers are so much taller. You know, in Jordan Pickford, who is an outstanding young England goalkeeper, and surely the future England number one. And he's had a great start to the season, Kevin.
Yeah, especially the first few games. I think, like the rest of them, he's lost a bit of confidence. I think, like another goalkeeper I know, he's been beaten from long range quite a lot. except I'm talking about Richard himself. And I think that's just knocked his confidence a little bit, because there's been some great goals and some bizarre goals against him this year, and I think he's just lost that bit of confidence. But the distribution and everything was, the first few games was just amazing, and I'm looking at this guy going, this is the real deal, you know, so hopefully he gets that back.
And I think, Steve, with the Albion goalkeeper, Matty Ryan, he's just grown in confidence throughout the six or seven games we've played. And I think his passing range has really impressed me. I think he's really grown into the role. And I think he will soon become, if he isn't already, a real fan's favourite.
Yeah, he's definitely come on a bit. And I think, it's just getting used to it because, you know, when you're playing in Australia, where he was playing for Mariners and stuff, and that's what he's grown up with. You know, anything, even if you went to Division 2, for somebody who's been playing in the A-League, you go to League One or the Championship, the pace is so much quicker.
Yeah.
You know, you're here, there's a lot of knocking the ball about and lethargic passing and everything, Whereas you get over the halfway line or in the last third in the UK, in any of those leagues, it quickens up and it's on you like a shot, you know? And that doesn't quite happen here. But I don't know what happened when he was in Belgium because I didn't read a lot into it. So
they loved him out there.
They did. But again, they play a slower passing game, don't they? It's not, you know, in that league, and even the Belgian players, you know, when you look at the team they've got, it's not until it gets into the final third that the whole thing speeds up. But in the Premier League, it's frantic, you know. You know, and if you're a team like us where you're under pressure a lot of the time, he may not be used to that, you know, the ball coming his way every sort of 90 seconds, and you've really got to be on your toes all the time. Yeah. I will say when he played for Australia the other night, somebody said to me, expect to see Matty Ryan on the halfway line. I went, what? He said, because he comes running out of his box and sweeps up behind the defence. And I said, really? Well, we haven't seen that so far. But we saw it when he played the other night with Australia. You know, there was balls played over the top and he came running out. And you think, oh, no, if he misses this.
Yeah.
No, he cleared the ball when he was 20 metres outside his box.
Maybe.
So he is comfortable with the ball at his feet. There's no doubt about that.
Okay, let's get some predictions for the game on Sunday, as we've only got a little bit of time left. So, Kevin, come on, what's your prediction?
Nil-nil. I don't even want to be boring, but I'm just going to go. I reckon I have to go for a scrappy sort of... I can't not back my own team. I'll go for a scrappy 1-0 for Everton, I think.
Would you be happy with a draw?
A shot that'll come off Duffy's arse or something like that, and that'll get us the win that we need.
But would you take a draw? Would you be happy with a draw?
No. Oh, no, you can't say happy, no matter how bad we are. You can't say happy because you look at someone like Scotland, you know, they draw away to Lithuania, and next minute they just miss out on qualifying. And I think if we start saying, let's be happy with a draw, and then we miss out eventually on going to Europe by 2 points, then no, I wouldn't be happy with a draw.
You still don't think you're going to be in the relegation fight, then?
We won't be in the relegation fight, no matter what. you don't know when the run's going to start. If it would sort itself out, it's a bit early to not still be positive. So we'll see.
I've not got what happens.
But if it carries on, then yes, it won't be likely.
I've not got to the point where I've offered Kevin a wager to see who finishes higher. I might wait a little bit later till the season to do that.
Yeah, I'd wait.
Yeah. Okay, Steve, a prediction from you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll take 1-0 the opposite way around.
I know what you'd take, but what do you think it will be?
I think it'll be 1-0.
All right, okay. Yeah, I think it'll be 1-0 to the Albion as well.
Yeah, we'll all look forward to an exciting game then, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure we'll be texting each other at 1:30. Is it 1:30 in the morning? Yeah, 1:30 in the morning on Monday morning, while we get no sleep, ready for work. Although you got the day off, haven't you?
Which one?
Kevin, thanks for spending the time to talk to us. And good luck on Sunday, but not too much. Please. This is the Albion Raw Down Under in association with Pure Media. So we're coming to the end of the show and just time for us to talk quickly about the Renf charity game between the Brighton and Palace fans.
Well, it's on the 28th of October at the King's School in Sydney, 11 a.m. kickoff. We have to have it quite early, the kickoff, because it gets too hot otherwise. And yeah, I just hope to see everybody there that's in Sydney, really. And if there's anybody visiting Sydney in a couple of weeks' time, come down, join us, send me an email.
Can you tell us, so obviously it's a charity match for the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund, but where exactly does the money go? Where did last year's money go?
All the money goes back to the Renf, and it will be no different this year. All the money will go back to the Renf. But I've been having conversations with John Moriarty, who was the first Indigenous person to be selected to play for what are now called the Socceroos, Australia. And he started up a foundation which is for Aboriginal children to get them into football, which happens up in the border of Queensland and the Northern Territories. Six of those children are now in Sydney on scholarships. So I'm hoping that they may well be able to come in a couple of weeks' time, along with John. And the Renfrew very kindly said that they will donate the money back that we've raised over the years back to his foundation. So we're looking forward to seeing him down there. Obviously, I know his story. I've gone to breakfast with him a couple of times, but it'll be interesting for him to tell his story to everybody else while we're down there.
And what date is the Renfrew again? Is the match?
28th of October.
A little bit of history of the actual matches. How many Brighton Palace matches have there been on Australia so far? Fans matches, that is.
This is the fifth one.
And what's the... who's winning at the moment?
We're winning. We had one match which was a draw. Unlike the UK, we didn't have a penalty shootout just because at the play of the match was just so hot. I think everybody was just dead on their feet.
Yep.
It was about 33 degrees and we're all running around out there.
It's too hot to play football.
Let's just call it a draw. Be done with it. In fact, that was a great day, actually. That was the Palace fans made it their national meetup. The Palace fans coming in from Brisbane. In fact, I think they're coming in again this year. A few of them from Brisbane, Melbourne, Adelaide. So there was quite a few of them on that game, and it was just good. It was good banter between the benches, and, you know, it was just a great day. And we were obviously lucky enough to have Paul Reid and Lloyd Arusa play for us. Paul scored the equaliser, probably the last kick of the game, and went off on this little lap of honour. You'd think he'd won the World Cup. it was quite fun, actually. We were in absolute hysterics. He ran down to the... there's a photo of him somewhere where he's running down to the... He ran down to the corner flag, around the corner flag, back up to the... towards the dugouts, high-fiving everybody as he ran past. It was a funny thing, actually.
Awesome. Okay, so you'll be posting more information on the Seagulls Down Under Facebook page, I assume, nearer the time. If anyone wants to find out any information or get in contact, is that the best way to contact you or look for information?
It is for those people over here. For anybody else, they can either go to the website, seagullsdownunder.com, or they can send me an email if they're coming over. seagullsdownunder@hotmail.com.
Awesome stuff. Okay, I think that probably just about does it for us in the very first edition of the Albion Roar Down Under. We hope to bring you the editions of these podcasts probably every 2-3 weeks at the moment, and then maybe as the season goes on, we'll be a bit more prolific. But we're still in the sort of teething stage at the moment, but we'll hopefully we'll get some more shows out soon. All right, Steve, thanks for your time today, and we'll hopefully get together for the next one. And thanks for joining us on the Albion Roar.